Every year, thousands of people across the world are killed or injured by landmines. According to the International Coalition to Ban Landmines, there have been more than 130,000 casualties since 1999. In 2018, more than 1,700 children were killed by landmines, making up nearly half of all civilian casualties for that year. And while more than 160 countries have banned the use of landmines, the U.S. is now on the brink of expanding its arsenal. Last week, the Trump administration eased restrictions on the deployment of landmines by the U.S. military, claiming they're a necessary tool in armed conflict. But arms control experts and human rights advocates say the decision only puts civilians at greater risk, both during and after potential armed conflict. For more on this, we turn to Jeff Abramson, a senior fellow at the Arms Control Association, and Alex Horton, staff writer at The Washington Post. Thanks to you both for coming on the program.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks.
Alex, what exactly are the new changes to the U.S. landmine policy?
Well, before landmine use was only on the Korean Peninsula, for specialized DMZs to protect against the North Korean invasion. It's more of a defensive posture, and it also restricted the production of mines that were not used for that purpose. So this new policy change last week reversed that, putting mines back into production and giving combatant commanders with approval from the Secretary of Defense to use landmines in offensive or defensive capabilities. So it is quite a major shift.
Jeff, what's your reaction to this decision by the Trump administration?
This is really a truly horrible policy decision made here, and it's in line with many others that he's made. But these weapons are inhumane. That's why 164 countries around the world, including all of our NATO allies, have decided we should not be using these weapons. And as you said in the introduction, the people who are harmed by this are their civilians afterwards. So this is a step backwards. It's the wrong move for the United States. We haven't used these weapons really in 30 years, so this is the wrong way to go.
Alex, how is the administration justifying this decision?
Well, in 2018, they said, well, you know, we're getting in too many protracted Middle Eastern wars, and we have to turn our efforts to big adversaries like Russia and China. They believe that's the future of warfare. So in that kind of thinking, I think what they did is evaluate their current postures and weapons and what's off the table, and, you know, it appears someone surfaced landmines. So this is really geared towards, what the Pentagon is thinking, that, you know, if the U.S. gets involved in a conventional ground war, they're going to want to use these weapons. The only thing is these haven't been used since 1991. It's kind of really unclear how effective they were in the Gulf War. There have been reports that they dropped landmines, anti-personnel and anti-tank, from helicopters and planes. Then they move so fast through the desert that U.S. forces began encountering their own minefields. So there really is a very quick first and second order effect when you use these in combat.
But aren't we moving away from ground combat?
Well, that's what's unclear, right? You know, you can't predict the future. Part of the Pentagon is reading the tea leaves of what they predict, you know, part of the Trump administration's policy, at least in theory, even though we've seen deployments to Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, the Trump administration does not want to get mired in insurgencies in the Middle East, and the rest of the forces sort of reorienting to Russia and China. So, yes, there's not a major ground campaign coming, but, you know, the future is uncertain.
Jeff, the administration claims that landmines today are safer and they're smarter. Is there any truth to this?
It's hard to believe that these are really going to be much better than in the way that they're talking about it. The argument that you can make a smart mine that self-destructs and will operate as expected was discounted for decades now. They're claiming that these will deactivate or self-destruct in 30 days. Unclear if that's true, unclear if that's really been tested in the field. But the reality is, even if that is true, what you have afterwards is you have a minefield where people can no longer feel safe to grow crops, to have a livelihood. The impact might be casualties in the sense that we think about of them, explosions. But longer term, you have places around the world where people can no longer have a livelihood. So you have impacts that are broader than just the immediate harms.
And are there specific places that this will pose particular risks to around the world?
Well, this is the question you asked Alex, is where do they plan to use this? And, you know, it's really hard to envision this Russian or Chinese major combat on the ground. They haven't been talking yet about using them in the places where the United States is active, but those are places around the world where people are very poor, where they are devastated by war, and those areas are going to be the ones that are impacted. We're talking about the places where we create terrorists by using weapons against civilians, and that's what these weapons really might end up being.
And as Jeff mentioned, you know, when pressed, the Pentagon really wasn't going to say we were only use this against big conventional adversaries with advanced technology. You know, they could just as easily be used against ISIS in any number of countries. But, you know, one thing that hasn't been addressed by the Pentagon is what happens after you put mines. I mean, it's already clear in the Gulf War that, you know, if you are going to mine an area, that means perhaps it is valuable to the enemy as a bridge or a road or a fallback position or a defensive perimeter. If you're going to go in there, you probably want to take that space too. So that also closes it off for you. It also gives a rich R&D environment to a country like Russia. If that were to happen, they can grab one of these landmines and figure out how to defeat it. In a conventional or an unconventional fight against ISIS, for example, you know, you're giving them essentially an IED bonanza by salting the earth with, you know, hundreds or thousands of mines at once. You know, those will just come back and haunt U.S. troops on the ground for years and decades after that.
Jeff, what does this decision say about the administration's overall military policy and agenda right now?
I think the Trump administration is unconcerned about how other countries think about U.S. behavior, and this is another sign of that. It really wants to have any capabilities he has, no matter how much allies and others around the world have agreed that these weapons aren't useful. And that creates an environment where other countries feel like they can do whatever they want to do. It really undermines any sense of security down the road by sort of shared responsibility of what is allowed.
Alex, you've spoken to people who say, medical professionals, who say that injuries from landmines are among the very worst injuries that a surgeon can confront. Is that right?
Well, I haven't spoken to anyone directly. I mean, that was from the International Committee of the Red Cross. Mm-hmm. But yes, I'm familiar with, you know, what they can do to a person.
What is it that they say is so terrible about this particular weapon?
Well, for one thing, you know, anti-personnel mines are designed to kill, but also to maim, to take resources off the battlefield if you're a foot soldier. But if you're a civilian, you know, a farmer or a child walking in a field and you step on one, you know, the explosive charge may not kill you, but it opens up grievous wounds in your legs. It often leads to amputations and blindness. You know, since they're buried in the ground, the explosive charge will send dirt and debris and things like small parts, pieces of rocks, into your body, making surgery and just healing and just much more complex. You know, so these are things that will take hands off, take legs off. They will blind children. And, you know, these are places around the world that don't have, you know, first-rate hospitals. You know, so if you are a Cambodian farmer, you know, and you get your leg amputated by one of these, you know, the outlook is not great. So, you know, that's why they're so grievous, not only because of their design, but also where they are in the world.
Jeff, beyond the human cost and the issue of physical safety of civilians, what is the environmental and economic toll of landmines?
It's the economic toll that really gets a lot of attention. And if you think about what Alex just talked about, the places this is used, these are in parts of the world that are still developing. You know, they've gone through warfare. And people there have very few options, and often they will need to access those grounds for crops or to raise cattle or other animals. And that ability to do that is limited or off the table, or they just take the risk. And that's why you keep seeing these harms decades later, is that people need to use that land that has been mined. So the economic aspect is very difficult, and there have been some studies out there that really show there's a knock-on effect, as you would expect. If you are able to start using territory that you couldn't before, that economic empowerment then enables others, and you get growth in that region. The environmental side is, I think, less well studied, but still important. You have places where elephants in India, for example, have been maimed. You just have that denial of ability to use a place that really has a long-term economic impact.
Alex, what is the response to this new policy been from both policymakers here in the U.S. as well as the international community?
Well, Senator Patrick Leahy, you know, who is on the forefront of how U.S. weapons are used worldwide, intentionally and unintentionally, has been very vocal about this, as, you know, he described it last week as a major step back. You know, the international community has been muted publicly, but you can imagine, you know, as Jeff said earlier, that, you know, every single NATO ally is a signatory to the mine ban. So if you get into a conflict where, you know, the U.S. decides to use them, you know, that could create some tension between allies. What's also interesting about this is the State Department, since the 90s, has spent more than $3 billion on clearing and destroying landmines across the world. You know, that's a major diplomatic effort that they do, and it's a sign that, or a signal to the rest of the world, that the U.S. wants to correct their errors and correct their legacy and help people. But, you know, there's a ledger problem. If you start adding mines to the world, you know, that number is growing instead of going the other way, which is the U.S. has been doing for some time now.
And Arun, if I could just quickly add on to that, I think you'll see greater response from the international community. Certainly the civil society community is quite upset and being active and loud about that. But it's also going to be interesting to see as this election cycle goes forward. We're already seeing three of the Democratic candidates say that they would reverse this policy if they were elected. So I think you'll see more of that as well. It might not be a core election issue, but you will definitely see a divide here.
Jeff Abramson is a senior fellow at the Arms Control Association, and Alex Horton is a staff writer at The Washington Post. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.